and that's very painful. To acknowledge that without adding any pain to that, meaning without being judgmental to ourselves or to the one who causes us pain. So for people who can't do that, they go through hypnosis session and you know, they're led to deal with their own, to connect with their own past, with their own emotion at the subconscious level. But mindfulness meditation is to deal with emotion at the conscious level, to bring things, to bring activities at the subconscious level to the conscious level. So you don't really need to wait until the other person becomes nice to feel good yourself. By changing yourself, you are in a better position to change the other person. But if you want to change the other person first, before you change yourself, you will find that more difficult. Any question?
Okay. Don't mind I quote your example just now that you mentioned that you took a cab. All right. He's supposed to charge you at $6.50, but he charged you at $13. Okay. If I were to look at this situation, and if I were not to get angry with him, all right, if my first thought that comes to me is, he probably did this money for his family. This is so-called my assumption being made. Is my thought in this way correct or is not correct? But I feel that there's no point for me to argue with him. I mean, just an example. So maybe I'd like to hear a point of view, whether am I right, you know, to feel that he probably need this amount of money.
Surely he needs money. Whether he's desperate or not, we don't know. People who have a lot of money, they need money also. The fact that his mind operates that way, that he feels the need to cheat, that he doesn't mind going that way, going down that way, you know, that fact in itself is good enough, you know, to look at it as pain. That's for me. I don't know his family background, and I don't want to judge. But morally, he has chosen the path that would put him in trouble. If not with me, then with the law or with anyone else. So he has set himself on the path which is dangerous. So that in itself, you know, if you look at him as your child, you know, you can have compassion towards him. But if you look at him as somebody who cheat you, who has done injustice to you, you're taking that personally and that could cause you more. If you can point out to him, I could point out to him, why you care? It's only £6.50. Why you charge me £13? If I have a reason to, if I had the way to argue with that, you know, I would have done that. But I didn't have that way. I only saw him press twice.
Hello, thank you, Venerable.
I want to ask, how if, like, let's say we are the one that having negative emotion and then we accidentally hurt someone. So for example, if you are tired and then like, and then we are like complaining or criticizing someone, and then that person probably feel hurt, and then we feel guilty later on. How do we turn it into compassion? That's the first question. And the second question is, if, like, let's say we see other people scolding another one, we see someone scolding another one, and we see both of them are suffering, is there anything that we can do to help them, or are we just like ignoring them? Thank you.
The first question, in order to connect with your own pain, first is your own pain. You need to connect with your own pain. Before you can connect with your own pain, you will keep causing pain to others, not just to yourself. Because you are in pain, that's why you cause pain to others. To connect with your own pain is difficult. The easier one is to connect with your breathing, to connect with your breath. That is why we do breathing meditation. Breathing is important biologically. If we don't breathe, the body wouldn't have oxygen supply, and we wouldn't live. And breathing is also a measurement of our emotional status. When we are very anxious, breathing is shallow. If we are under a lot of stress, breathing is abnormal. We almost forget to breathe. So, to breathe and to be able to connect with this breathing, meaning aware, to be aware of breathing, this is a very good beginning. With this, you're going to find out the other pain. Maybe physical pain first, maybe the pain of restlessness, and then that kind of emotional pain. Then what you need to do is to acknowledge them one by one. This is guilt, the pain of guilt. This is the pain of regret. This is the pain of anger. This is the pain of restlessness. This is the pain of habitual reaction. Whatever. You need to dissect the emotion. If you put many emotions together, they are very difficult to handle. You put five pieces of bricks together, you find it difficult to carry them, to carry them far. But if you had to carry just one piece of brick, you can carry that without difficulty and a long way. In the same way, when emotion, when they become entangled, when they start supporting each other, becomes a network, then, you know, that's difficult. That is why we talk about one thing at a time. Dealing with our emotion one thing at a time. Getting in touch with a certain emotion. Maybe this time anger, maybe confusion, maybe restlessness, maybe irritation, maybe blaming, you know, just to name them individually. If you like, you can write diary to list those emotions. And then what is important is, you know, just to feel them, just to feel those emotions, to feel them again mindfully. Unless we feel them, our subconscious mind cannot be informed. Cannot be informed of the pain, about the pain. So to inform our subconscious mind about the pain is just to feel them without reasoning them, without thinking about them. If by just thinking about emotion, you can solve that. We can all solve that. We have all gone to school, to university. We learn how to think. But we have never learned how not to think. We have never learned how to stop thinking. Sometimes you can't stop thinking and you can't sleep. Okay. So, to acknowledge the pain in a proper way, first yourself and then the other people that you think you have hurt. Then when it comes to the quarrel between the third person, as in your second question, the first is we always have to start with ourselves, whether we are affected. Whether emotionally we align ourselves with one of them, with either of them. Whether we start blaming, yes, it's right that he gets some scope because he is like this, is like that. Or maybe you start blaming the person who scolds, start having negative attitude towards that person. If that's the case, you got to work on yourself first. Once you have worked on yourself first, you are in a position to be an objective mediator. To listen to both of them, to their pain. They don't need to agree with each other, but if you simply listen to them. Sometimes we don't actually need to give any solution. We just need to listen to them. And they feel that their pain is being understood, being recognized, that they are not alone anymore. And from that point, people start behaving in a very reasonable way. Before that, they think they are alone with their pain. No one understands their pain. No one ever listens to them. Like that. So from there, you have to see whether, you have to judge whether you are able to intervene, whether it's the right time to intervene. If not, you can start some grounding work, that is to listen to them individually. That's what I would do.
Thank you so much.
One question here. Why I was doing the exercise just now, the judgmental thought automatically came in. How should I deal with this? I just remember 3 R. Register, release, and return. Register, release, and register the automatic thought. And then release it. Attention, movement, control. Then return to breathing. Register, release, and return. You need to acknowledge the automatic thought. All the automatic thought needs is an acknowledgement. How do we love our spouse and children with attachment, as attachment causes us suffering? This is a very enlightening question. I don't have a good answer to this, but I'd like to recommend you to Dr. Rick Hansen, the author of The Buddha's Brain. In that work, okay, he looks at attachment neurologically, how your neurology changes, how you can love without attachment. I think he would answer better than me, so I give you homework.
Venerable, how do you respond to somebody who writes to you to ask for forgiveness over an incident that I don't remember or recall. So I'm not affected, but I do feel the other party's distraught mental state or perhaps losing sleep over it. How do you help her with the pain?
Yes. You remind me one incident. I think it must be about 8 years ago. I was suffering from laryngitis. Then I had a lot of difficulty speaking. Then one of the ladies in the audience, okay, was laughing at something. But then after she went home, she felt guilty. She felt that she was laughing at me, laughing at my difficulty. I didn't feel that. I didn't even notice that. So she wrote me a letter, okay, asking for forgiveness. I had a difficult time locating this lady in my memory. But I wrote back that I didn't remember that. Okay, if I remember that, I would have included it in my meditation, in my this Karuna meditation. I would have done compassion for my throat pain, laryngitis pain, and I would have done compassion for her, okay, for not being able to connect with my pain. So I would have done that. I told her that. What I told her was to acknowledge, to simply acknowledge the chattering mind. That's automatic mind. Not to place too much importance on that and not to ignore that. To place too much importance is to indulge in that. To ignore that is also the other extreme. So to avoid these two extremes, to just simply acknowledge that chattering mind.
Venerable, I have a question relating to the second practice just now. So when I did the practice, we were asked to meditate on negative and positive emotion. When I meditated on the negative emotion, I noticed my shoulder tense up. And when I meditated on the happy emotion, my body relaxes, my shoulder relaxes. And then when I focus on my breathing, it relaxes a bit more. So my question is, what's the role of meditating on the positive emotion in that practice? And would positive emotion in our meditation practice, will it have a beneficial effect? Should we practice it?
I just read this question first and I answer your question. That will lead to the next and last session. First question. When did the term you have been using, emergency mood, do you have the Pali word for it? The second question, Pali, how do we transform the negative emotion into positive emotion? I think there are many terms that we can use to explain emergency mode. We grade defilement into three. The Latin one is called anusaya kilesa in Pali. And next to that is called pariyutana kilesa. And more than that is called vidikama kilesa. That's when transgression takes place. I think from the second one, Okay, the second and the third, you can call them emergency mode. That is Pariyutthana Kilesa and Vidigma Kilesa. How do we transform negative emotion into positive one? We have just done this now. To acknowledge pain, the pain of anger, the pain of to look at all the negative emotion as pain, to group them as pain, to relate to them as pain, to feel them as pain, and then to transform them into compassion. The word dukkha is very important. The reason the Buddha used the word dukkha to describe all our experiences is because it's very wide-ranging. It can include all our experiences. The same with compassion. So now I come to your question, and I think we don't take a break now. We only have 40 minutes. Okay? And this session is joyful session. That is why, you know, you might survive without a break. Just. if we train our emotion to be positive, as I mentioned earlier, that's going to have the impact on your brain. The left side of the frontal cortex will have more activities. So even the brain, okay, respond to the positive and negative emotion. The left frontal cortex, the activities from there will send signal to the nerve system in the body. Only the positive signal will be given to the nerve system. And the nerve system, the tissue, all the biological system that we have, okay, will operate in a positive way, using minimal energy for maximum benefit. Not under pressure, not under stress. So that's the positive thing. The negative thing is to use maximum energy for little benefit. I'd like to speak to the Burmese audience, Burmese speaking audience. There is a saying, for something worth only $100, you invest $1,000. So that's negative, $900 negative in terms of accounting. 900 losses. Because you invest $1,000 just for $100 return. So it's very important to train the mind to connect with positive things. To congratulate yourself for the good thing that you have done, for your achievement. Sometimes, you know, I sit with families in their living room. The walls are decorated with certificates, members of Royal College of this and that, but they themselves, they feel miserable. They can't connect to any of those certificates. The joy that those certificates give them, they can't access anymore. The mind has lost the skill to connect with those certificates. They become just a piece of paper. Actually, it's more than a piece of paper. Is the record of your effort, your hard work, your dedication, your skill. But even those skills, if you don't, even those qualities, if you don't connect with them, you will lose them. you will lose them. So it's very important to develop positive emotion. With positive emotion, we have positive thinking. With positive thinking, we have positive action. I have mentioned earlier the research from Harvard University, 21-1. People are usually obsessed with negative things, what goes wrong in their life. Once they have solved that, then they start looking for another shortcoming just to fix problem. You go to work, you only fix problem. Once you have fixed that, that's gone, that's the history. And you have to look for another problem and solve that. You are paid for that. So you are paid to feel negative. To feel negative. I usually ask children, okay, if you have 5 math questions, you have answered 4 of them. Where is your mind now? Where is your attention? It's on the 5th one. They have already done 80% of the work. But they are going to spend 80% of their time on the 20% left. The 20% problem left, unresolved. And they're going to spend as little as 20, perhaps less than that, on the 80% of achievement that is in their hand. This is what the Greeks say in 80-20 theory. 80% in your life is going on well. 20% is improving. But you spend 80% of your energy thinking about the 20%. And you spend very little time rejoicing in the good thing that you do. People usually tell me that they are very stressed out going to work and they don't feel happy, they want to change their job. I said, I don't really have any objection. You change your job. Whether you stay in the same job or you go to a new job, one thing that I want you to do is you go to work before you come home. Just think about one thing that you have done well. Congratulate yourself and go home. Because that's not usually what you're going to do. You're going to take a lot of rubbish into your head and go home. I should have done that differently. I shouldn't have said that. I should have said that. All sorts of negative thing, okay. You don't need to make effort, they just come in. Because of the habit, what we call habit energy is there. So you need to turn this energy into the positive one, try to relate to the positive one. Before you go to work, think about something good at home. And then go to work with that positive mind. You are ready to face the day, to start the day's work in a positive mood. Sometimes people come and meditate with me. We have weekly classes, we have monthly classes, we have a long retreat and like that, you know. People often complain that they can't concentrate. I said, look at the positive side. We sit for 1 hour, if you can only focus for 3 minutes. Take that 3 minutes to the next session. Forget about 57 minutes. Because you can't build anything on the 37 minutes. You can use the 3 minutes as your foundation for the next session. So looking at the half full side of the glass is actually very important in emotion management. I often repeat myself, please forgive me, I'm going to repeat myself again here. And in KL, a gentleman, because he can't concentrate, and he is scared of meditation. So when his children asked him to come and see me, I think he's going to ask me to meditate. I better not go. So he's scared of me also. And then when his eldest daughter told me like that, okay, Papa is scared of you because you might force him to meditate. I said, okay, I promise not to meditate with him. So just ask him to come and see me. So when he came, I told him that, okay, I was tired and maybe we can do some thinking, some positive thinking. I said, okay, you can think whatever you like. Just think something you are happy about, something that you are proud of. That's all the meditation instruction. We sat for 20 minutes. His mind never wandered. He was a station master at the KL station, rail station. One day, a Singaporean lady, that this was about 40, 50 years ago, a Singaporean lady, you know, coming back from Penang with her toddler child. And after a few hours of journey, you know, the child became restless. And he was getting fatter with his toy, so he threw his toy away. And the mother gave another one to play. He threw everything he was given up to some time. There was only one thing she had. And she didn't mind giving her son this one just to calm him down. That was her purse. So she gave him her purse. And she has the tickets, the money, the telephone number, everything in there. And the child was very happy with the new toy, playing with that. And very soon, the restlessness came in. And he just threw that out of the window. The train was moving. And the ticket conductor came in. After some time, where's your ticket? She is playing. He wouldn't have it. No, you are on the train with a ticket. I can take you to court. She cried and cried and begged him for understanding. It took a long time. And just before the KL station, the man told her, okay, I won't take you to court, but you must get off at the next session, that's KL session. 6 p.m. in the evening. She was hungry. The child was hungry. She had no money, no telephone, no friends in KL. So she was she was crying on the platform. And this gentleman, the station master, he came in for the evening shift. He saw her, what's wrong with you? And she told him. And he said, okay, don't worry. I'm the boss here. This is my office. Come and sit in front of my office. The first thing he did was to go out to a nearby restaurant, get some food and give it to her. And then from his own pocket, and he also told his staff, okay, to contribute, you know, they collected some money. They bought him a ticket. The extra money they gave her as pocket money. The next train came. he put her onto the train, made sure that she was safe back to Singapore. He never met this lady again, but whenever he thinks about this, he feels so good about himself having done this. This gentleman has 4 children. Everyone, okay, is London graduated. But he never, I mean, he can't connect with the joy of his children's success. I'm sure he has many certificates as well. I have visited a few of their homes in his house, his children's house in KL. A very comfortable family. But his mind is always looking for something to worry about. It's a habit. For him, he identified with that worry. As a responsible parent, as a dutiful father, as a dutiful husband, as a responsible citizen, you know, he uses that worry to form his identity and cling to this identity. He never thought that it's possible to be a good father, a good husband, without worry. That never clicked in his mind. So, I didn't know this story. So we sat for 20 minutes, just 2 of us in the tea room, and after 20 minutes, I asked him to share his experience with me. He shared this experience with me. I was very moved. I said, okay, think about this again and again, if not every day, every month, think about this. This is going to change your brain. Because positive emotion plants the positive neuron in your brain. And positive neurons, again, condition, you know, positive psychology. So it's important that we think about that. With children as young as 7 or 8, I ask them, okay, when you win a football match, how do you feel? Wonderful. Yay. Okay, think about that. Okay, we are going to spend 3 minutes. Think about that. You're playing and you're winning. You're winning. Just trying to connect with that. And then your friends are winning and then trying to connect with that. Finally, trying to connect with the joy of their opponents, the other team. Now you lose, they win. Trying to connect with their joy. If children can do this, they have healthy emotion. They grow up with strong emotion. They cannot be easily shaken emotionally. It's about self-confidence. If you're confident in yourself, simply because, you know, half of you get up and disagree with me, I don't need to feel insecure. If I feel good in myself, you see? So this is about feeling good about ourselves. You have already bought a very nice and expensive handbag. Why do you need someone to approve before you can feel happy? Just look at your nice handbag and feel good about that. You need this exercise. Otherwise, you buy expensive handbag just to make somebody happy, just to satisfy others. Look at the contradiction in our own psychology. These are all part of complicated and complex emotional web that we have to get to, that we have to get to know. And it's possible to get to know this. So we're going to do this exercise. This is a very joyful one. Okay. If I mean children, you can think about the good thing. Okay, in the school, you know, what makes you happy. at home, what makes you happy, like that. I think about 10 years ago, I did this here in Singapore, 9 years old girl, now she's big. She was thinking, one day she got a prize in the school, and her mom and dad were smiling. So we did it for about 5 minutes, and that was what she was focusing on. That's very good if she could connect with that. If that becomes a habit, that's very good. So first is trying to think of something that you have done and you're proud of. Either for yourself, maybe in education, in family life, in social work, in anything at all. And the second thing, with your family members, trying to relate to their joy, what makes them happy. The third one, in your friend. The fourth one, your colleagues. The last one, in somebody you don't like. Trying to feel their joy. This will be difficult, but just try. We have 10 minutes. This is a very short exercise to change the habit from being obsessed with negative thing to positive one. We need 3 weeks, according to psychological research findings. We need 3 weeks. But the Satipatthana Sutta says 7 days is also possible for some people. So any question? When you said feel the negative emotion, does it mean to release the negative emotion? For example, if I feel sad and want to cry, then just allow myself to cry. Or shall I try to build up some positive emotion? For example, practice laugh yoga. That's the first one. Second, why I often fall into sleep when I try to meditate. The second one is easier. I don't know why, but it's a good thing that you fall asleep. Many people can't sleep and they take sleeping pill. Now, meditation makes you sleep. This is very positive. You shouldn't fight with sleepiness. You shouldn't go into emergency mode. Simply, you feel drowsy in meditation. Sometimes we feel bad because we think other people might have negative opinion on us if we feel sleepy during meditation. Other people are alert, we should be alert. Something like that. You compare yourself with other people. You put pressure on yourself unnecessarily. Sleepiness is very innocent. If you start fighting with sleepiness, you will fight with anything. You will quarrel with anything. Feeling the negative emotion means many people don't feel that. Instead, they get carried away by that emotion, or they fight with that emotion. So just to simply feel the negative emotion is very difficult. You need non-judgmental mindfulness to feel negative emotion. Just to hold this negative emotion without judging. Without judging good or bad. Just to recognize anger, okay, this is anger. To feel how anger is changing your thought, changing your emotion, it's changing your physical reaction. If you can just observe that as a third person, as a spectator, without getting involved with anger, just to look at that as a third person, that would be what I would call to feel negative emotion properly. And that would be very educational, very informative. Do we have anything else? I think everything. Any more questions?
Good afternoon, Bandy. I'm the youngest.
Okay.
I'm the youngest in my family, and I've got brothers and sisters. They consider themselves like to be great brothers and sisters because they teach me many things and provide me with many things that I should appreciate. But sometimes they are obviously unreasonable and misuse their titles as brothers and sisters. So, is it sinful that I feel angry towards them, or should I leave alone my anger, agitation alone, and confront my own agitation? Like you mentioned, keep in touch with my anger. That's my question. Thank you.
Thank you. very nice question. You need to confront your own anger. To confront it in the right way. In the right way. the wrong way is to go into the emergency mode of fight or flight. That would be the wrong way. In most cases, it's not necessary to fight with anger. Sometimes we don't confront them, we suppress them. That's considered to be one extreme self-torture. It's considered self-torture. We torture ourselves by suppressing, by dedicating a lot of our energy to suppressing the anger. Sometimes when we don't suppress them, we just allow ourselves to be dictated by anger and behave in a very angry way. That also, that would satisfy you temporarily in the short term, because you think you have made your point and the other person gets your point. But in the long run, that's a bad habit. Whenever there's anger, if we can look at this anger as our friend, instead of fight and flight, we have another term that I didn't have the time to use here. We call it tend and befriend. Tend is to tend, that to attend to anger. Befriend is to make anger your friend. In the Buddhist term, in Pali, friend means metta, meaning to turn anger into metta. That is not to feel bad about anger. Instead, to feel your own pain for having this anger. If your brothers and sisters, if they abuse their position, then you should feel their pain. You should feel their pain. Because even though they are older, they still feel insecure in some way. Even mom and dad, they still feel some insecure. In some way they still feel insecure. With that insecure mind, people can cause pain, even to their loved ones. And if we can feel their pain, not only that, we protect ourselves from their action. We can also help them to heal their own pain. So that compassion is very important. So what is important is if you can draw an angry face and try to find some way to put a smile on that. That would remind you, tame and befriend anger. The right attitude towards anger. This time is your big brother and sister. Next time it may be somebody else. But anger will never change its quality. It's the same. It remains as destructive as ever.
Thank you, Bhante.
What is the difference between feeling indifference and being able to connect to others' feeling, yet not being affected by them? Feeling indifference is actually suppressing. Sometimes it's about the inability to connect with their pain. When you can connect with other people's pain, you also have very limited ability to connect with your own pain. It's likely that you will interpret your own pain in a way that would cause more pain, that would make pain easier to happen the next time. So dealing with our pain in the right way and dealing with other people's pain in the right way, there's no difference. If you know how to deal with your own pain in the right way, then you will be able to deal with other people's pain as well. Not being affected by them is, as far as I can see, only mindfulness and compassion, these two qualities, will help us to stay connected with other people's pain without being affected by them. Instead, we can use their pain as motivation. As motivation to work hard. People use competition as motivation to work hard, to motivate themselves. But I think that's a very worldly way. The Buddha motivated himself with dukkha, with suffering, with pain. And there's plenty of pain, endless pain in the world. And you will stay motivated all the time if you can connect with pain. Say, for example, if you you are doing